Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about choosing between being a physical therapist, a PT assistant, or a personal trainer. We talk about quad strength after ACL reconstruction and isokinetic testing for overhead athletes and baseball players.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 8 of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. I'm here with Lenny Macrina, my partner, champion, director of PT here. I'm here with the Gabenator, Gabe Morgan, from Armstrong Atlantic Coastal University of the South College.
Perfect.
Perfect. He's from Armstrong. Is it university?
Yeah, so you say university.
Every episode. We still can't get it. Welcome, Gabe. We're back for another episode. I'm going to answer your questions. So please, if you have more questions, keep sending them our way. MikeReinold.com/podcast or use the hashtag AskMikeReinold on Twitter. And we'll get your episode. We'll get your questions on the episode, hopefully. But Gabe, what do we got? Let's go question number one.
First one comes from San Antonio, Texas. Robert asks, I'm a NASM fitness trainer, VA in education, prior military, and 34 years old. I'm currently reattending college, taking prereqs, doing volunteer time at a PT clinic, and trying to pull up my GPA to apply to the PT program. It's been way more challenging than I expected. I've looked into a PTA program, but I tend to not to get positive feedback on that. Any advice for aspiring PTs, and where do you see the future of physical therapy, as well as a trend of fitness training with functional fitness, corrective exercises, and giving stretch routines that may overlap with what a PT does?
All right, so let's see. This is a question then from Robert from San Antonio. Good city. I like San Antonio. But let's see. So Robert's personal trainer. He's considering going to physical therapy school, maybe PTA school, right? Or does he just continue being a personal trainer and start to blend into the corrective exercise world? Heck, you want to start, Len? I mean,
yeah,
you get
that's a lot. But I think it depends on the life you want to lead. I think I'd have to take a step back and dealing as a PT, I have a relatively normal schedule. So you can create an 8-to-5 schedule, 9-to-6, whatever. I think when you're a personal trainer, it seems like the life is a little all over the place. You're going to have your 6 o'clock till 10 o'clock appointments, and then you have like 5 hours off, and then you have your late afternoon, evening appointments. If you're okay with having 12, 14-hour days and probably making a decent amount of money, then I think that's something to consider, and a lot of people do that, and that's tremendous. I personally, I'm a PT, so I like the normal 8-to-5, 9-to-6 kind of world, and then I can supplement other things in other ways and have evening work if I want it or any other thing. So I think taking a step back and knowing what life you want, I think that's going to be one big consideration. I don't know if you have anything else.
I think you got two things to consider. What do you want to do every day? I think That's part of it. And then also some of just the lifetime ramifications. So we're talking about either being a PT, a PTA, or a personal trainer. And you're going to be in, if you continue as a personal trainer, you'll have no more accumulation of debt. If you're a PTA, you'll have a little bit. And if you're a PT, you'll have a little bit more. You'll have more than that. But then I think your salary potential changes as well. So I think you really have to consider that. I think all three are fantastic professions. I recommend anybody going to any of the three depending on their specific needs. I think the future that I like is physical therapists that have an excellent strength and fitness background. So there's a lot of like strength coaches that are going back to PT school, or you know, personal trainers that are going back to PT school. And I think I like that. I think that makes you kind of the best of everything. I would caution you for trying to be the personal trainer that fixes people. I think you get some issues with your you know, probably your practice act and whether you're kind of blending that there. But I would say, you know, it comes back to the corrective exercise bell curve that I tend to talk about. You know, you probably get lucky 20% of the time with your corrective exercises and help people, but the majority of time you're going to probably do nothing, and sometimes you're actually going to even hurt people. So if you just, I always kind of like say it, if you just flip to like chapter 7 of some sort of corrective or mobility book and try to, you know, slap some exercises on somebody without a proper assessment or evaluation, I think the majority of the time you end up hurting the person. So I definitely don't recommend, you know, kind of going that approach. I recommend you learning that, but I recommend you collaborating with the right professionals to kind of do that together. So I don't know if that helped you in any way. But
I definitely agree. And it's going to, I don't know your personal situation, Robert, but, you know, how long is it going to take for you to get your GPA up? And then can you afford the debt? Can you afford the 2 to 3 years of time spent in PT school? And then you accrue all that debt. That's all big things. You know, you marry, you have children. There's so many things to consider in that. So I can't really help with that. But I think investing in yourself, either as a personal trainer and taking courses, or investing in yourself and going to PT or PTA school, it's an investment in yourself, and that's always a positive investment.
Nice. All right, Gabe, what do we got? What's number two?
Next question comes from Susanna from Chile. In my own experience treating ACL patients, treatment goes well initially when regaining range of motion, basic strength, controlling inflammation, and basic balance. The patient progresses fine to running but has no pain during daily living, can do every hard exercise fine, but somehow, even 9 to 10 months out, the same patient who religiously followed a program still sees a significant loss of mass. With heavy squats, you can see a quad avoidance pattern on the affected side, and a unilateral knee extension still shows a significant strength difference even after hard work at 10 months. My question is, how can I better facilitate strength/hypertrophy for faster increases in muscle mass, specifically in the quads, and is the quad avoidance pattern a neuromuscular pathway problem?
Big question. We got some long ones today.
Yeah.
Let's try to get shorter questions, maybe. But all right. So, some Suzanne
good
from,
question,
from Chile. Yeah.
See
so
it a lot.
So yeah, ACL patients that essentially have prolonged quad weakness. So I think the literature shows that even at a year out, and there's some studies you can probably find 3 months, 6 months, 12 months out, that you have quad deficits down there. Even if you feel normal, even if you've completely returned to functional activities and even sports, you tend to have quad deficits. I do know there's also studies that show that for some reason this is more noticeable in women than men. And I do know I do know that there's ways that we can kind of beat that. So the studies, I think, in my head that I know of, there's two main things that can minimize that I know have been proven in the research. One is a good preoperative rehab program. So if you do 4 weeks of a pre-op rehab program, this has been shown in recent literature, I think in the last couple of years in a pretty good journal, I don't know the reference on the top of my head, but in the last couple of years, if you do 4 weeks of a pre-op program, I think you had about 10% more strength, let me rephrase that, you had 10% less loss of quadriceps strength when they measured it down the road at 3 or 6 months or something like that. So getting your preoperative strength back early, I think, is a good one. And then two is obviously, I think, what, you know, we've learned from many great research projects, like from Lynn Snyder-Mackler and Terry Shimoleski, and a bunch of authors in the past have showed us that neuromuscular stim in the early phases of ACL rehab has been shown to get that quad back faster. So I guess two things you can do early on is pre-op strength, make sure you maximize it, and neuromuscular stim immediately afterwards.
And add one more, I'm going to add a third one. You talk about a quad avoidance gait, which to me means they are still not getting terminal knee extension, which means they don't have full knee hyperextension.
And she said that, right, Gabe? Like she said not quite hyperextension. Okay, yeah.
So if they don't get normal hyperextension in the knee after an ACL, which we're seeing that a lot, I get a lot of people a year, 2 years out that still don't have full hyperextension. That's the problem. The quads need that hyperextension to get that amount of force production that they need for maybe doing a deep squat. But if they still have a quad avoidance gait and they don't have full hyperextension, normal to the other side, numerous studies have shown, if you look up Donald Shelbourne out of Indianapolis, he has a countless studies that show that outcomes are highly influenced by hyperextension in the knee. So that's something to consider too. And I think the 9-10 months out of surgery, I think it's still early to make a decision that's the quad that they're going to end up with. I think this is a 12 to 18 month process to really get the quads back to normal function, despite us getting our kids back 6-8 months out of the surgery. I think it's still early to, so I think loading it is a good thing, but they got to have good base and good range of motion, and then you can really, you know, come to a conclusion that, oh boy, this is what we're going to end up with. I think it's still too early.
Yeah, and in the physical therapy world, again, I think sometimes we're not great at restoring functional strength or integrating strength and conditioning principles. Once you get to like 3-4 months down the road, I mean, they should be doing a pretty good strength and conditioning program. So if you're still having them do rehab-based exercises and machine-based things, I think that's not in our best interest too. I think, you know, we need to redo a study where we have kind of a more modernized strength and conditioning program as well. So either, you know, as the PTs, you got to learn this stuff. So I have a bunch of Inner Circle webinars on how we do that and how we do some periodization, how some of these principles and those types of things. But, you know, if not, you got to find someone you can collaborate with. Yeah. You know, it's not just about rehab exercises. It's about getting them back to strength and
definitely
conditioning.
Definitely collaboration, because as PTs, we lose them because of insurance at 3-4 months. And so we never really see it play out. So they end up going somewhere else or doing some paying out of pocket. So
maybe not in Chile. We don't know in Chile.
Maybe not in Chile.
Yeah. But Gabe, what do we got with number 3?
Next one comes from David from Walnut Creek. Does your staff utilize isokinetic testing and making decisions regarding start of interval throwing program, i.e. shoulder external or internal rotation? Thank you.
Nice. All right. Good one. We got a quick question. I like that one. Thanks. Dave, was it Dave?
David.
Sorry. All right. Good question, Dave. So, so isokinetic strengthening. So, I haven't used an isokinetic machine in how many years? 14 years, maybe? I'm trying to think. Did we even use it then? Probably 13 years or so, we haven't used isokinetic. Those big, huge machines, they take so much time to set up and stuff like that. I think they give you good data, but for years, I mean, for you know, decades, we did a bunch of research on isokinetic profiles of our overhead athletes. We've done handheld dynamometers. We've actually done some comparative studies with handheld dynamometers and even just standard manual muscle testing to kind of put these things together. And I feel like we have a good enough basis of just using our hands or even a handheld dynamometer to know if they can start throwing. If you have an isokinetic machine and you have the time and luxury to do it, I'd say absolutely go nuts. But it's definitely not mandatory. I personally haven't done it for years. I mean, there's just a lot of challenging things for them. So I think they've kind of fallen out of grace. I don't think we necessarily kind of need them in there. You can get the same ratios that you can find, and if you don't know, you know, the ratios for overhead athletes, baseball players, we've published all these findings. So, you know, between myself and Kevin Wilk and some of the publications that Lenny's been involved with, we've published a bunch of these things where we showed the profiles of isokinetics and we've done handheld dynamometer, right? Have we published that?
Yeah.
I'm sure we have.
Probably. I feel like...
But it doesn't matter. I mean, you can use the isokinetic profiles, and if you know, like, ER-IR ratio is about 67% or something, you can just use that with a handheld dynamometer. So, now you have a little teeny device. It costs maybe $500, and you know it's a good little thing. But you know, otherwise, I mean, you can certainly use your hand. And if you can't break them, they're ready to throw. I mean, I hate to be that simplistic, but I really think that's all you need. So I definitely don't think you need it. If you have it, go nuts. But otherwise, I think there's plenty of other things you can do and get by. And we don't do it, so I don't know if that helps you.
I agree.
So awesome. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Episode 8 in the books of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. Ask us some more questions. We need your help. MikeReinold.com/podcast. Use the hashtag AskMikeReinold on Twitter. And hopefully we get some more cool questions, and we'll keep answering them. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReinold.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReinold.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.